Good evening. It was November the 21st, 1991. That was the day that forever changed the life of a middle-aged Christian family. In a matter of hours, they had to make a choice, a life or death choice. And it wasn't their life. It was the life of someone they didn't even know, someone they might never know. The family had 8 children, but they had 3 severely handicapped daughters. 2 of them lived in a state mental hospital, and the youngest lived at home. The official of the hospital had called, saying they were coming down to discuss something very important. When they arrived, they informed the family that the youngest daughter at the institution, age 29, had been sexually assaulted by one of the male nurses and was now 6 months pregnant. They were even more sober when they said how they had found out. They had noticed that her stomach had been swelling and had taken her in for an x-ray. The results had shown that there wasn't a tumor, but rather a baby inside. The president of the hospital said that considering the mother's condition, the drug she was on at the time, and the radiation the baby had been, the amount of radiation that the baby had been exposed to, they said there was no way this baby would ever live to see the light of day, let alone be normal enough mentally and physically to live a normal life. The mother only weighed 65 pounds at this time. The official recommended having an abortion, putting the man who had done this awful deed to justice, and going on with their lives as best they could. The family, as brokenhearted as they were, instantly knew they could never abort this baby, regardless of how handicapped or deformed it might be. A daughter-in-law, who happened to be there at the time, instantly said, "I want that baby." She knew full well she would probably have to deal with a handicapped child the rest of her life. But she distinctly remembered 6 months prior to this when her 4-year-old daughter had come to her one day and said, "Mom, we are going to have a baby," which she knew was impossible because of prior circumstances. So she just knew this must be a word from God. Now, The man that did it served 1 month short of 10 years in prison. And the lady is still alive today, and you're looking at the baby. You see, God has a plan. God has a plan for each of our lives. I was born January the 23rd, 1992. It was like 2 months and 2 days after it came public. And after the whole thing came up, the media got a hold of it. Because here was this situation where this handicapped lady gets raped and she's pregnant and the family won't do an abortion. The media thought they were nuts. And so it made national news, and it was all over the newspapers and stuff. And in the back on the white table there is a 3-ring binder, and it has the announcement that Paul Miller read at Cedar Crest announcing the whole situation, and all the newspaper articles and some pictures of Jeff, my dad, and some different stuff. So afterward, I'll make sure that everybody that wants to has time to read it. You might find it interesting. I was adopted to birth by my aunt and uncle. And I still live with Mom. Dad has since died. But about the age of 5 or 6, started going to school here. And this place has a lot of memories for me. Spent 8 years of my life here. And they were interesting years. Hard years and good years. But anyway, started coming to school. And I'd see my friend's moms come pick him up, you know, and I began to wonder, you know, why am I adopted? Why can't I have a real mom and dad, just live like everybody else? But don't know, it bothered me some, but it wasn't just real dreadful, I guess. But I just wondered, why can't I be like other people? I mean, I knew that Faith was my mom, but I had no idea who my dad was. I didn't even know I had a dad till I was 12 years old. I thought I was like the missing link or something, because where do I fit in here? And so anyway, life went on, and gave my life to Christ when I was 8, and that was a good experience. But at the age of 12, Dad took me aside one morning, and he told me what happened. And that brought a lot of questions. He explained to me what happened around my birth, and all that. And that brought so many more questions into my life. And I had all these questions, but yet I didn't know how to get rid of them. I didn't know how to express myself, because I knew very, very little about the situation, but I knew that it was a touchy situation, and that grandpas and mom and dad, they didn't like to talk about it, because, you know, it was a painful experience. So Dad had told me what sex was, and as you might expect, you start trying to figure out what this is. And it got me down the wrong road, to put it nicely. It was only until later that I've realized that immorality was my way of dealing with my pain, because it helped me forget and drown it out. When I was 15, I joined the church and all that, but I still was dealing with all these different questions. You know, why did my dad do what he did? Why can't I see him? Where is he now? And all this different stuff, and it was all locked inside, because I had no idea where to go with it. And so I just kept packing it down harder and harder and harder. And I really wish I hadn't done that. But when I was 17, most of our youth group went down to Texas for the fellowships. And I know some of you were down there. I'm not sure exactly who all. But on the way down, we picked up Stephanie Wengard from Oklahoma. And I had known her for most of my life. And we had a good time going down there and stuff, hanging out with other youth. But Sunday afternoon, she was in a motorcycle accident and died later that night. And being there at the hospital was probably one of the hardest things I ever had to do. And I think one of the reasons it was so hard, because I knew if that would have been me, I knew where I was going, and it wasn't good. And so after that, my life just pretty much spiraled downhill. If it could have gone any further downhill, I guess it did. But I was dealing with all this pain from my past, plus the pain of losing a good friend, and my life went downhill so bad. It was horrible. I don't know how many times I was ready to just give it all up, go out in the world and do my own thing. I had a cousin that got in the wrong crowd at school, and I don't know how many times I was just ready to call him up and say, "Can I come live with you? I'm sick of this." But by the grace of God, Mom and Dad found out that things were not good, and sent me to counseling at Nevin and Joanne's. I had like 6 months to think about this before I went. And I had no idea who these people were, but yet I was supposed to go to these people and tell them all about myself. And half the stuff that I was dealing with, I didn't even know I had an issue with it, because I was so busy trying to drown my pain out with everything. But I wouldn't be here tonight if I hadn't gone there. They helped me identify what I was dealing with, and they helped me realize that it doesn't matter what my situation is, God still has a plan for my life. The second to last session was by far the best one. It was, all my emotional pain that I had as a child. I had a lot of rejection and that kind of thing from being adopted and just different issues. And so I had a lot of emotional pain. But that session was my emotional pain cleansing session. I don't know, I'm sure a lot of you have been there and know what that's like. But the first couple sessions were just trying to figure out what I was dealing with, what my core issues were and how they could help me deal with it. And but that session was my cleansing session, I guess. And Joanne led me into prayer, and it was basically like I had a one-on-one conversation. I would ask him a question, and he would respond with like a thought or an image in my mind. And I asked him, why am I here? And he said, for a purpose. And I was like, what is that purpose? And he said, so I could be glorified through a bad situation. When I was in the hospital, were you there? And he said, yes. I asked him, did you hold me? And he said, yes. And then he gave me a picture of him holding me there in the hospital. And right then, I broke down. I cried like a baby the whole way through that session. I never knew that. I always thought of God as some big thing out there that just kind of watches down and makes sure we're not having too much fun. But I realized that God does care. And even though things are really tough sometimes, God is there. He cares. And he said, I have a plan for your life. I was like, what is that plan? And he said, I want you to go to prisons and churches and share your story. Why me, of all people? I mean, there's 7 billion other people in the world. Why do I have to be the one to do this? But when we were done with the prayer, Joanne asked me if there was anything else that I wanted to tell Jesus. And I just thanked him for saving me and for allowing me to be used by him. And I gave everything completely to God. I said, God, if you can use my story as a ministry, you can just have it. And after I went through counseling, it was a couple months later, and I'm starting to, the woolies are starting to wear off a little bit, It was such a mountaintop experience, and now things are kind of starting to wear down a little bit. And God has ways of reminding us that he is in control, and that whatever we do, we're supposed to follow him, follow his commands. I had started working at Sturdy Build about a month before I went through counseling. And one afternoon, I was working in the shop and had a little bit of an accident. It could have been a whole lot worse, but it wasn't. I was up on a scaffold, and I stepped off the side, is about all I can say. And I learned a couple things that day, mainly that concrete is hard, and that if you ever fall, don't land on your hammer. I had my hammer in the back, and it hurt pretty bad. I was hurting so bad I couldn't hardly move. So they had to take me in the ambulance, and that was an interesting experience in itself. But so I'm laying there waiting for the results papers, and I'm wondering if my guts are all messed up or whether my back's broken or what. And I'm like, God, why this, you know? What if I never walk again? And it was just a good experience for me to realize that God is in control of every situation. And the nurse came back out, and, you know, she was an older nurse. She'd seen just about everything. And she's like, well, nothing's broken, but you do have a slightly bruised hip. And it hurt to laugh, but yet, how am I supposed to keep from laughing when she says that? But she told me that I'll feel it for the rest of my life, and so far she's been right. And one night, I was in bed, and I was having my devotions, and I was thinking about my story and going out sharing, and it looked really big. It looked really, really big. And I was like, God, how am I going to do this? Where am I going to get my support? Who's gonna help me out? And he said, all of heaven is behind you, cheering you on. And that meant a lot to me. In January of 2012, I went down to CBS. I was scheduled to go for 3 weeks, but I came back after two because Dad was not doing well at all. The hospice nurse said that if I want to talk to him yet, I should come home. And it was really hard to leave because 3 weeks, after about 2 weeks, you kind of just get to learn to know everybody, and then I had to leave. But it was hard to leave, but I was really glad I went. And when I got home, his health went downhill real, real fast after that. And and he died about a month later, I think. But Grandma was here with us before he died, and or when he died, actually. But the night that he died, he died about 12:45 at night, or 12:30, I think, anyway. But Grandma was in the room with him, Grandma and Mom, and we knew, or they saw that it was getting really, really close. And so Grandma went out into the dining room to come get us. But before she came to get us, she peeked her head around the corner to go just to see how he was. And he was laying there and his eyes were almost shut. But she looked back and his eyes were wide open. It was sparkle. And he was looking up somewhere past the ceiling. The next morning, Ken Knisley called, and he wondered what time he died. And Mom told him, and he said, at 11:45, two of his girls were on their way home from a singing. They were coming down into Arlington, and they said all of a sudden it was just like a spotlight came out of heaven and shone right down on our place. Everything else was just jet black. That was a real blessing to us as a family to have that reassurance of where he is. I had talked to Eli Yoder about meeting Jeff. It was around the time of Dad's death, I think. And he thought I should probably wait about a year after Dad died just to kind of I had my time to grieve, and which was a really good thing. But, you know, I wanted to meet him, but yet at the same time, it was really, really scary. Because how am I supposed to go meet a guy who I've never met, but yet had so much to do with me being here? So I talked to Eli about it. I asked him if he knew him, and he might have seen him, but he never really knew him real personal. But Dale Hetzler, he used to work here at Fairview. I'm sure many of you know him. He had actually been in prison with him, with Jeff, and got to know him real good. And so after about a year, something just felt like it was time to do it, time to meet him. And so one day I happened to be working with him. Dale was an older guy, and he did a lot of odds and ends. But one day I happened to be working with him, and I was like, "You know this guy, Jeff Walker?" "Oh, yeah, I know him real good. I got his phone number and everything." And I'm like, "Well, there's my contact, but now to get enough courage to go do it." And so at least I knew where to go. And so I talked to Mom about it and Grandpa's and some of their other family members, and they were all good with it. And I could tell it was pretty hard on Grandma and Grandpa especially, but they gave me their blessing. And so I was like, okay, now I have the blessing now to find Dale in private. Because, you know, at Sturdy Bill, there's normally quite a few guys running around in the shop. And to find Dale, of all people, in the shop is going to be pretty much a miracle in itself. But this was a Thursday morning, and I was in the shop that day, and I'm like, okay, God, if I'm actually supposed to meet Jeff, Dale and I will meet in private. How is this going to work? First break came around, 10 o'clock break, and everybody's walking up to go take break. And here comes Dale walking through the shop. I'm like, Dale never comes through the shop, but he did that morning. And so I started talking with him a little bit. And after everybody kind of left, I was like, yeah, whenever it works for Jeff, just go ahead and make the contact and set a time, and I'm pretty flexible as far as schedule goes. So he's like, yeah, sure, I'll see what I can do. This was a Thursday morning, and I figured it'd probably be a couple weeks before he gets back to me. But he came back like 10:45. Yeah. And he's like, well, Saturday at 2 work. And I was like, well, I don't have anything going, but do I actually have enough guts to go do this? And I was like, yeah, it'll work. And that was pretty much when I got on my emotional roller coaster. I mean, I went bonkers the next 2 days. Because here I was supposed to go meet this guy. I'd only had a picture of him for like maybe 3 months. And I didn't know what to expect, how he was going to react, how I was going to react. It was crazy. But Saturday came, and 2:45 came, and I knew I had to go. And so I went, and I was just dreading, you know, what's going to happen. Worst case scenario, we're going to pull in the driveway at the same time, and it's going to be really, really awkward. And so I was like, okay, God, don't let that happen. And I came up, we met at Dale Hetzler's place, and I pulled in, or I was coming up here to Dean Road, and I see this little blue van, and I'm like, oh, great. And he's turning off, I'm like, this is not going to be good. But they turned off, and it wasn't him. And kind of led you on, didn't I? But anyway, I went and met him then, and it was the weirdest feeling. I didn't know whether I wasn't gonna beat him up, but it was like, you know, I didn't know what my emotions were gonna do when I actually met him. But when I walked up there and I met him, and I had a peace come over me like I've never felt before. It was like it was done. I mean, I knew who he was. He knew who I was. And we've had some contact since then. And when I was with him the first time, I asked him if he'd be interested, or I don't know if you call it willing or not, to meet some of the rest of the family, because like some of my grandpas and some of the aunts and uncles wanted to see him, wanted to meet him. And yeah, he said he'd be willing to meet anybody that wants to. And so I was like, well, I'll see what I can do. And I think it was about a month later that we had a family reunion here in the area. And all of the aunts and uncles, except for my Uncle Myron and his wife, all the out-of-state people were able to go meet him, but Myron had to work. And so we all went and met him there at Dale's place. And it was such a beautiful time of forgiveness. It was really, really hard for my aunts. But my Aunt Marilyn, it was really cool. Because I mean it was so hard for her to face him. But at the same time, she made sure that he knew that they held nothing against him. And I really, really wish I would have known this beforehand. But he texted me last night, and said he wants to come hear my story sometime. And if I would have known everything, I would have tried to get him to arrange it to where he could be here tonight, but it didn't work out. But the last time I saw him was at Yoder Day, and we just kind of stumbled into each other, or more or less. But anyway, so we've had some contact since then, not real often. But I think it was about last July, soon after we met, they were living in Wichita. But they moved to Hutch. And I was a little bit worried about it because I was like, you know, what if he's going to want to meet every single week, you know, every weekend, and I'm not going to want to meet every weekend, and this could get really ugly really quick. But it was all good. He kept his distance and stuff. But last July, his parents came down to meet him, or to see him. And I was able to go meet my biological grandparents for the first time in 22 years then. So that was really interesting to meet them for the first time. And it was pretty cool. So, but what I want to encourage all of you young people, you guys have so much potential. You know, I always thought of myself as a pretty good guy. But there's one thing I want to encourage all of you, especially you young people, especially you young guys. Keep yourselves pure. I was a porn addict for about 5 years. And it was only recently, within the last couple weeks, that me and a couple of my friends started an accountability group. And that has been such a blessing. To just go share our hearts and just to know how each other's doing. And trust me, guys, you don't ever want to get started in that stuff. And you dads, talk to your kids about this stuff. Don't just tell them it's wrong and stop there. Help them out. Because I know you've been there. Help them out. Because I know one thing, it would have saved me a whole lot of heartache if my dad would have done that to me. And so I just want to encourage all of you. No matter what you're facing in life, no matter what you're dealing with, God is there for you. He has a plan. And just recently, There was a quote that I heard that really, really stood out to me. If I can think of it. It's, often the places of our greatest pain are the places of our greatest ministry, something like that. And that's so true. But God cannot use your pain unless you give it to Him. And so I just want to challenge all of you. Don't waste your pain. Give your pain to God and allow Him to use it for His glory. When I was at Bible school, one night I was praying. I was like, God, you know, I'm down here in Bible school, and this was soon after I had went through counseling and had my calling from God, I guess. And so I was like, God, you know, give me a verse that I can use when I go out and share my life story. Because I thought that would be kind of handy, actually. And that night, the speaker, I don't even know what he spoke on, but he read from Jeremiah 1. And verses 5 through 9 hit me like a brick. I'm going to read them here for you. Jeremiah 1:5. Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I sanctified you. I ordained you a prophet to the nations. Then said I, Ah, Lord God, behold, I cannot speak, for I am a youth. But the Lord said to me, Do not say, I am a youth, for you shall go to all to whom I send you. And whatsoever I command you, you shall speak. Do not be afraid of their faces, for I am with you to deliver you, says the Lord. Then the Lord put forth his hand and touched my mouth. And the Lord said to me, Behold, I have put my words in your mouth. So I guess what you heard tonight wasn't me. And, yeah. And this is actually the third time this week that I'm sharing my story. Sunday morning, I went out with Eli Yoder to prison out here. We went to the South Unit and the Central Unit. And that was really neat because the South Unit was really, really good for me because that was where Jeff spent his time there in South Unit. And I also do a lot of, I go down to Alabama every year for Renewed Hope. It's with We Care Prison Ministries. And this last year was really, really cool. We were down there, and it was nice. Weather was great. Leave this horrible cold for a while. And so we were down there, and I was like, God, you know, give me an opportunity to share my story. Because, I mean, I share a lot, like one-on-one. But I thought it would be kind of cool to have, like, a little service or something. Well, last winter, like a year ago, when we were down there, we had an ice storm, and we couldn't go in the prisons. But one morning, we just had like a share time, testimony time, and I was able to share there at the headquarters. And so this year, I was back at the same prison again, and had the same leader or team leader. And Wednesday evening, I think he came to me and wondered if I could share my story there in prison on Thursday. Then it was the last day. And I was like, yeah, sure. And so, like, that Thursday afternoon, we had special service and stuff. And that was really awesome. And the guy that opened the service for me, he's a former inmate and now does full-time prison ministry. And when I was done, he did an altar call. I had no idea he was going to do it. He just went up there and did an altar call. And a couple guys came forward, and the one guy rededicated his life. And there's just something about going and sharing what God has done for you and watching God transform lives. It gives me the woolies. It's awesome. So I just want to encourage all of you to live your life with purpose. Because no matter what you've been through, what you've done, God still loves you. He has a plan for your life. And Don't hold your pain back. Give your pain to God where He can use it for His glory. Thanks for your attention.